This is, again, it's a work in progress. It's something that I've been interested in for a couple of years now, and I've had several ongoing policy research projects pertaining to healthcare policies, pharmaceutical policies in various countries. So one of the things that we picked upon was the HIV/AIDS. As you all know, we're in the third decade since the first HIV case was identified, and every single country now has some sort of policy or another. Excuse me, I too got up with a cold. So every single country now has some policy or the another in terms of surveillance, in terms of education for the vulnerable populations, all HIV populations, and also for pharmaceuticals. We have about, we're into the third ARV or antiretrovirals right now, and those are the most expensive, also the most effective drugs. So we're comparing China, India, and Brazil, because all these three countries are developing very, very rapidly. They're projected to be on top of the global economy by 2020. Each of these countries has national programs in place. However, they've all worked very differently with varying levels of efficiency. So that's why the comparison. Okay. So they're all three emerging economies. They have a lot in common. They have huge populations that are more younger and growing as compared to the United States, which is going into an older population right now. And therefore, the spread of disease, the potential for actually going ahead and spreading more disease is huge over there. There's a significant lack of a lot of societal infrastructures in terms of drug delivery, in terms of reaching out to the most vulnerable populations, reaching to populations that are more rural versus urban, et cetera. They both compete and cooperate on many fronts, pharmaceuticals, healthcare policies, medical supplies, in terms of healthcare professional movement into westernized nations. So they're all competing against each other, but they also collaborate and cooperate for a lot of generic pharmaceuticals. Okay. IMS recorded, this was in 2007, so they recorded a prescription market growth in the Asia Pacific, excluding Japan, for 13.3%, a significant growth number for the pharmaceutical industry for Asia. There are huge business opportunities for investment. There's a huge population of consumers. There's also a movement of people going outside for medical tourism purposes. So there are people who are visiting in right now India, China, and Brazil to get medical treatments, which is why HIV/AIDS is a huge concern there. The ranks of the impoverished are very high, so disease burden is very high, not just for HIV/AIDS, for a lot of other infectious acute diseases as well in all three countries. The respective HIV/AIDS epidemics are all growing. Surveillance is very poor in every single country, or in all three countries, simply because it's not possible to surveil every single locality that's out there, every single region that's out there, and I'll go over that a little bit later. Policy changes are underway to tackle the HIV/AIDS epidemics, and challenges continue to grow. All right, so just in terms of HIV/AIDS, there are about 39.5 million cases worldwide. This is from about 2 years ago, so those numbers may have actually grown a little bit more. It is estimated that there are about 2.7 million new cases each year in the world, and over 2 million persons die annually from this disease. It's in its third decade, however, the global pattern has rapidly changed. So primarily, it was brought on by tourists who were visiting these countries and the foreign prostitution trade, but it has mostly changed to domestic in most of these countries now. While Africa remains the continent with the largest number of people with HIV/AIDS, South and Southeast Asia, so India, China, Thailand, Vietnam, these are the countries where it's actually spreading at a much faster rate. There's a lot of religious and social inhibitions in each of these cultures where education becomes very problematic. There's a lot of stigma attached to HIV/AIDS, and these people are differentiated against when it comes to healthcare professionals providing treatment. All right. The virus itself is changing, so therefore keeping up with the newer and newer pharmaceuticals, which are more and more expensive, is very difficult in terms of providing access to everybody. The opportunistic infection, so HIV/AIDS, actually lowers immune system response, and therefore the opportunistic infections in terms of other diseases is very high in poverty-stricken areas. So it's not just HIV/AIDS that's a problem now, it's also all these other infections that these people have gotten. The affected groups, again, they face a lot of discrimination and stigma, so they may not have the access that they really need. And there are a lot of NGOs working in this area, as you're probably aware of. Each country deals with NGOs differently, so we'll see it there. Again, don't want to go into too much detail about this, but in terms of drug treatment, in terms of the pharmaceuticals themselves, they're extremely prohibitive and expensive. At one point in time, there was one single drug that GlaxoSmithKline was selling to Africa for about $600 per patient per year. And this is just one drug. Those countries have people who don't earn more than a dollar a day. So access to medications was extremely difficult. A couple of years later, an Indian company called Cipla Pharmaceuticals broke drug patents on three different manufacturing brand drugs and formulated what is known as a triple cocktail therapy. That's become really famous now. It was sold at half the price. So now it's three drugs rolled into one. So they sold it at about $350 per patient per day, which made access a little bit better, although it's not still what it really should be. So just to give you an idea, China, India, and Brazil are amongst the 17 farm-merging markets, and yes, that's actually a term. I figured that out. I read a couple of papers, and they said farm-merging. I didn't know what that meant. So this is farm-emerging markets. They're expected together to yield about $140 billion of increased sales for the multinational organizations. Big Pharma is already pursuing a lot of merger and acquisition strategies. As the first presentation maintained, there's a lot of contract manufacturing, contract research and development, contracted clinical trials that are going on in each of these three countries right now. So just to give you an idea, in terms of population, these three countries are huge. They're among the top five largest population-based countries in the world. In terms of economy, again, economy is growing at a very rapid rate, at about sustained growth of approximately 7% for each of these three countries. China is the second largest economy, but also the second largest purchasing power. There's a huge, huge explosion of middle class populations in both China and India, where the purchasing power has grown significantly. And in terms of politics, China is predominantly communist, with India and Brazil actually being democratic countries. China, India, and Brazil, all three have a public-private mix. Brazil probably has the best access of all three, where they have free treatment to all Brazilian citizens. In terms of pharmaceuticals, each of these three countries has its own generic pharmaceutical industry that is growing more and more into research and development of new active pharmaceutical ingredients. China also has a vibrant Chinese herbal medicine industry, which is pretty significant. There's an increase in generics makers, again, growth rate sustained at about 7% each year. These are supposed to be the largest pharmaceutical markets by the year 2020. So HIV/AIDS, again, in all three countries was reported first in the 1980s. Population estimates are a little bit off simply because surveillance is not the best in each of these three countries, but this is the best estimate that they could get. So this is from the AVRT site, and China has estimated that they have only 740,000 people living with HIV, and 105,000 identified AIDS patients. In India, it's said that they have 2.31 million, and Brazil estimates at about 730,000. China indicates a very, very low prevalence of about 0.05%, which may actually not be realistic. High-risk groups, again, they are pretty much the same, each of the countries, except that for Brazil, you'll see that heterosexual sex is not considered as a high-risk group. The Brazilian culture is very open. There is much less of a stigma and discrimination against HIV/AIDS patients in Brazil as compared to China and India. That is not to say that there is no discrimination at all. In terms of government response in all three countries has been there. Each of these countries established a national program as soon as HIV/AIDS blew up into an epidemic proportion. China actually was the last of these three countries to start with a governmental response, also has been the slowest in terms of response and access to pharmaceuticals. Post-2003, they launched the China Cares Project, where they said they would be giving ARDS to each of these HIV/AIDS patients, mostly for free. And it's a little late response if you consider when the first HIV epidemic case came out. There's inadequate disbursement. There's more availability of medications in urbanized areas and cities as compared to other regions, the outlying areas. In India, again, the initiative was to create awareness, first of all. The culture is very repressed. There is absolutely no talking about HIV/AIDS. It's all hush-hushed. And so education was one of the biggest problems. Just to give you an idea, there's 26 languages in India that are recognized. Each of these regions or states has its own language. And so even in terms of doing a national level education, it's extremely difficult to translate from one language to another to convey the same message consistently across the country. In terms of Brazil, again, there was less of a denial and stigma compared to these other two. And so education was a relative easier bet. Again, it's only one language, Portuguese, spoken in Brazil, so it's relatively easier to communicate. Brazil is also more urbanized than India and China are, and therefore that helps in terms of disseminating information materials, etc. In terms of the ARVs, again, India was the pioneer in generic manufacturing, and therefore they reverse engineered all the ARVs before they had to put their patent laws in place. So anything that was before they started implementing patent laws is not actually patented. And the contract agreements that they had, the sales that they were making to South Africa and other African countries for their ARVs, those still exist. They can still do their triple cocktails, which they did by breaking those patents. Brazil has always threatened to break patents. They've never actually gone that far, but they've used it as a leverage to get Merck, GlaxoSmithKline, to get all of these big brand pharma to reduce their costs of their ARVs so that they can continue providing this free treatment. Okay, so China is mostly, China also has 600 million in rural areas without adequate access. The problem is that urban dwellers have chronic degenerative diseases in addition to these acute infectious diseases. So privatization actually leaves even urban employed workers with access and cost barriers. Again, they've tried to do national health reform, just like the US, it really hasn't come about. It's been aborted a couple of times. There's significant issues with China's health sector reform. Okay, so I'm getting the nudge for a minute, so I'm just gonna run over this. All right, let's forget about that. So moving on, again, same thing with India, mostly fee-for-service healthcare sector where people have to go out. It's 95% fee-for-service, so very little insurance coverage for any of these medications. Like I said before, they've been selling these triple cocktails for $350 per person per year. The problem with India, though, is that it's not one epidemic. It's a series of epidemics that are mostly towards the borders, not so much towards the inside of the country. So surveilling these series of epidemics along the borders is extremely difficult, considering the fact that the borders are open. There's a lot of immigration going on out there. Okay, the other problem is that a lot of labs that test these HIV/AIDS cases, that do the blood testing, are not in adherence to quality standards. So there's a lot of either false positives or false negatives going on. All right. The funding for the national AIDS program in both China and India is grossly inadequate. Brazil, a little bit better, again, an emerging market. Brazil and Thailand were amongst the very few nations that actually developed a universal access to HIV/AIDS medications for their population, so just provide free access to these medications. Again, Brazil, the reason why I put Brazil last was because Brazil is really the model for HIV/AIDS containment. I wouldn't say just cure or whatever, but it's been a model for containment of the disease spread in terms of education, surveillance, condom distribution, addressing the IV drug use, addressing the sex workers. So, and of course, the pharmaceutical provision for all their population, for all their affected population. So in terms of future directions, looking at the patent laws is very crucial towards addressing diseases in developing countries, because if they cannot possibly manufacture their own medications, or if they cannot break these patents, then access becomes a huge problem. They cannot afford these medications. Under compulsory licensing, which is a way to actually reasonably break patents, if you declare that this country has an epidemic of this disease, you can issue a compulsory licensing. But compulsory licensing means that you have to give royalties to big pharmaceutical manufacturers. In some cases, pharmaceutical manufacturers have demanded exorbitant amounts of royalty, which is very unconscionable. Again, continuous monitoring and surveillance is necessary to curb the further spread of HIV/AIDS. It is problematic, but each country needs to address it so that they can actually go ahead and find out who their vulnerable populations are, get accurate numbers, and hopefully contain the spread of that disease. So that's what I got so far, and then we have questions at the end. All right, thank you very much.